So we're on the bottom of Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph, the last line on the Amud. Amar Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina is the Talmud who always records the actions, the Minhagim of Rebbe, of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So in the previous Gemara, he recorded what Rebbe used to do with his tefillin, how he hung it up when it was inside an artik. And now he says, Ani Ra'isius Rebbe, I saw Rebbe during his davening, Gihek Upihek Vinisatesh Virok. So the last two I can understand, those are simple. He would sneeze sometimes during davening, Virok, and sometimes he would spit on the floor. What is Gihek Upihek? So if you take a look at Rashi and other Mefarshim, they say that Gihek means he belched. He had like air coming up from his body.
Right.
So that's called Gihek. And then Pihek means he would... just one second. Just maybe I get it. Maybe I got it switched around. Let me just say. So again... Gihek means that, yeah, Gihek means he belched, and Pihek means that he would yawn. So we have belching, yawning, sneezing, and spitting. So the Gemara is not too happy about this. There's even a fifth category, which is here on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Beis, Umemashvesh Bebigdo. So in those days, it was very common that they would have different kinds of lice or so on the Beged. Today maybe it would be, I guess you'd call it dandruff maybe, and he would flick them off his Beged. All this in the middle of davening.
Okay.
And the Gemara is not going to be happy about this. Avalohaya misatev, he wouldn't put his talis on if, let's say, it fell in the middle of his davening, because he didn't want to be mafsik. In other words, when he would pick up his talis, that would be a hefsek. So Rashi says, Loya notla misatev shalola hafsik. However, if you take a look at Tosis, Divya Maskel B'Mashmeish B'Bigdo, so after he quotes Rashi, he says, Avalo Misatev Im Nafla Taliso Utre Mili Ninhu. That according to Rashi, what we said about B'Mashmeish B'Bigdo and Misatev B'Taliso are two separate things. They have nothing in common. One is that he was cleaning off his beged, and the other is that his talis fell. Rabbi Tam Pirish, Techada Milsahi. You know, you read it like as a comma, so to speak, in a positive phrase. Pirish, Memashmesh Bibigdo, Tikain Shalo Yipol. It wasn't that he was shooing off some sort of bugs, but rather he was making sure that the beged shouldn't fall off. Aval im nafal me al rosho lo ayu misatev sharei hi hafsaka im misatev kevin shenafal legamri aval atakin ktsas shlo yipol lo ayu hafsaka. So the last two phrases here in Rabbi Chanina's description of Rebbe have to do with different levels of how much his beged fell off his body. If his beged fell off significantly, and that's called Nafal Agamre, then he has to literally do a new Maisa Levisha, that's called a Hefsik. But if he's only fixing it because it's moving over to the right or to the left, that's not considered a Hefsik. This reminds me a little bit of a Gemara in Shabbos about the difference between Omed Lekatef and Omed Lafush, if you're familiar with that. It's also in Ksubas. It means that sometimes a person, while he's carrying something, he will stop because he needs to take a rest. that's already a hefsek. But other times he just has to move it around from one shoulder to the other because the balance of the weight is not equal. So that's Rabbi Natan. But again, Rashi learns that b'mashmei big dough and misativ taliso have nothing, you know, one has nothing to do with the other. And now the Gemara goes on to say ukshuma mefahek, and we said that mefahek was when he yawned, hayameniach yado al santero. Santero is his chin, so he would cover his mouth up to his chin, so that nobody would notice that he was yawning. So obviously there is some sort of inhibition, even as far as Rebbe is concerned, to make sure that he would cover his mouth. Okay. Meisvei, the Gemara asks, what are we going to do with a Braisa? The Braisa says, Hamashmiya kolo b'tfilah. So if a person screams in tefillah, hareza miktane amuna. So like he doesn't believe in God. It's not like God doesn't hear me, you know. You have to scream out like the idol worshippers raise their voice during the tefillah. You know, they're afraid maybe the king doesn't hear them. In tefillah, we have a pasuk by Chana. A lot of the laws of tefillah we derive from Chana. It says, "V'chana nidaberes al liba," and she would just whisper. And then the pasuk says, "V'kola lo yishma," nobody heard her. That's why Eli HaKohen suspected of being drunk. He didn't know that she was davening. Then we have Hamagbia kolo bitfiloso, harezem in a va hasheker. So it seems like the Gemara is going through two levels. The lower level, which is not so severe, is mashmia kolo bitfiloso. In other words, he makes sure that people would hear him, as if to say, God doesn't hear me if I just whisper. The next level is magbia kolo bitfiloso, and he literally raises the volume of his voice during tefillah. And that's already minivaya sheker, because those who would worship the like Baal, you know, and other types of deities, and they would have their own false prophets, when these prophets would call out to their gods, they would raise their voice. And how do we see that? In Malachim Aleph, with regard to Nevi'a Baal, it says, Vayikru b'kol gadol. And they called out to their deity with a very loud voice. So you get the impression that Magbia Kolo is even a worse violation than Mashmia Kolo. Mashmia Kolo sounds like he's lacking a little bit in his faith. But Magbia Kolo sounds like he's imitating the Nevi'a HaSheker, and therefore it's considered like he's a group, he part of this group of idol worshippers. I was always confused, I'll tell you the truth, about people who raise their hands and wave their hands during davening. I wasn't sure if that really comes from Jewish sources. I never saw my father or my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and certainly not Rav Moshe Shapiro, who I learned by. I never saw them throw up their hands in the air. But yesterday on Shabbos, I saw somebody who was mamish. Every word he was throwing up his hands in the air. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's, well, there is something in the poskim about it, but that's what we have over here. Now, Rashi says that on the next few words in the Gemara, Hamagayik, Megahak, Umefahak, Harezem, Igase, Haruach. So Rashi says that it's not a proper etiquette, you know, to start yawning and belching and things of the like during your tefillah. It's nikar shu mechuar. It's something repulsive. And the Gaon says that, why does Rashi single this out in those cases? He doesn't mention that in misatej. And because misatej, a person who sneezes, that's usually la'onso. It's usually against his will. But megayik u mefayik is something he could control. And therefore Rashi points out that that's mechur. And Rashi gets it from our Braisa that we're studying now. It says that Megayik u'mefayik ha'reza migase ha'ruach, says Rashi, it's like he's repulsive. It's not, he's not controlling himself. It's like he's the boss, and he's going to decide when he's going to belch, when he's going to yawn. And then it says, "Amisatesh b'tfiloso." That's only a simon ralo. That's only a bad omen. In other words, the fact that he had to sneeze during his davening, that doesn't bode well. If God wants his tefillah, why is he causing this onus dafka during his tefillah? Now then it says, "V'yesh omrim nikar shehu mechoar." Now what is that relating to? It would seem that Rashi understood that nikar shehu mechoar is referring to magayik umefayik, not to misatish. But the Rif says that misatish means, in this particular context of harezim mechoar, misatesh milamata, which means that he passes gas, and that's something that apparently he could control, and it's somewhat disgusting, and it's certainly not appropriate for a posture of tefillah. So we're left with the following paradox. Rebbe, as was reported by Rebbe Chanina, would do all these things during his davening, and yet the Braisa says that this is something that's mechuar, that's disgusting, might even be similar to the Nevi Abal. Well, no. That I shouldn't say that, because Nevi Abal, that's a case of Magbia Kolo. That's not what we're talking about in Rebbe. Lo kasha, kan li onso, kan li tsono. In other words, that which they saw Rebbe, that he would do these things during his davening, that was because it just came up on him. It wasn't something that he could control. Which, by the way, means that a person does not necessarily have control over his yawning. Sometimes a person, especially when they're tired, they need air, and the body would automatically take an extra air, and that's a yawn. The reason I mention that is because I remember one of my rebbeim once got upset with a guy in the shiur who started yawning in the middle of the shiur. And I was thinking to myself, well, the guy was up late last night, maybe he was preparing for shiur, and you're berating him because he's yawning. So the Rebbe said to him, "Are you bored in my shiur?" You know, it wasn't that he was necessarily yawning because he was bored. He was bored. He was yawning like Rebbe, who was yawning in the middle of his tefillah. It was Leonsa. But the Bryce itself is talking about Lirtsono. In other words, it was something that he decided to do, and he sort of gas ruach. It's something, a repulsive behavior. It's certainly not etiquette. It's not appropriate for tefillah. So the Gemara has a kasha, el misatesh ha-misatesh kasha. We had the Braisa that said that misatesh is some sort of a pejorative, it's some sort of negative. We called it a siman ra. And yet Rebbe had no inhibitions, he had no problems about sneezing. Again, this is not according to the Rif, as we mentioned before. He has a different pshat in this sugya. So we're assuming that itush is li onso. And yet the Braisa says it's a Simon Ra. So the Gemara says, Misatesh ha-misatesh. Oh, here's where the Rif comes in. Nami lo kasha. Kan, in this case, milamala. Ukan, milamata. Now, once again, you could always ask the question about milamata, whether or not that's the onso or tsono. And Rashi says that here he was Mefiach b'kol, and you'll see that approximately maybe 10 lines down from the top. You see what it says Lamata in Rashi. So you get the impression from Rashi that even when a person has to pass gas, there are two levels. You know, there's one way of blasting it out in a loud sound, and that's something that you can control. And that's what the Braisa objects to. The Omer Rabbi Zera. Now Rabbi Zera is going to be quoted now as a proof that when a person sneezes, that's not considered a dover mechur. Hamilsa ivlali be Rabbi Hanuna. Ivlali means that I learned the reason for it when I was studying in the Beis Medrash of Rav Hanuna. Utekila li ki kule talmudai, and it was so beloved to me. It was like Tekila means skila, because you know then a shin in Lashon Kodesh turns to a tuf in Aramaic. So skila, it was shakul, it was worth to me, like all the halachas that I learned from all of my study of the Talmud. And what was that? That I'm as atish betvilas as siman yafalo. That just the opposite. That if it says siman yafalo, I'm sorry, if it says in the Brisa siman ralo, it cannot be referring to Misatesh, because as Rav Zera says, he derived from Rav Himnuna, then a Misatesh is a Simon Yafalo. And why is it a Simon Yafalo? Kishem Shosim Lo Nachas Ruach Milamata, Kach Osim Lo Nachas Ruach Milamala. That just like an Itush is something that hopefully relieves a person, maybe he's got a stuffed nose or something like that, so too, If he does this during tefillah, it means that it's keilu he's relieving Hashem. He's giving nachas ruach to Hashem min hashamayim. So that's a good sign. Now the Gemara asks another kasha on Rebbe. El rok a rok kasha. How do you justify that Rebbe would spit in the middle of his davening? I mean, that's something that would seem to be deliberate on Rebbe's part, and it's not something that's attractive. It doesn't seem to reflect good etiquette. So Gemara says, "Rok arok nami lo kasha, efshar kid Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ya omed betfilim is dami lo rok mavliyo betaliso. The im talis noahu mavliyo be afar kesuso." So it turns out as follows, that sometimes a person becomes so disturbed by the amount of saliva that accumulates in his mouth that he just has to get rid of it. So it's not something that he deliberately tried to create. And he has two options. The first option, again, this is all happening during his tefillah, is mavliyo betaliso. In other words, By covering it over with his talis, with his beged, it indicates how much he doesn't want to spit, and he's very, shall we say, modest about it, very tzanua about it. But that's only a good option if he doesn't mind spitting in his talis. But if his talis is going to get dirty as a result, and not only that, he's going to be so torud, you know, in the fact that he's dirtying his talis. I don't know. I'm not sure in your part of the world, but here, you know, you send the talis to the cleaners, they charge you a lot of money. So what does he do in that case? Mavliyo b'far kesuso, and that is the kerchief that he wears on his head, which I guess is something less expensive, or it's easier to clean. And therefore we could say that when Rebbe, as the testimony went, would spit, he would spit it in his, either in his talis or in his kerchief. The Bryce on the other hand is talking about a person who spits on the ground. And imagine if you show up in front of the king and you spit on the ground in front of the king, that's not something that would be proper behavior in the presence of the king. Now, it's interesting that Rashi has a little bit of a description. He goes into detail here, I'm not sure why, about what this arfakus suso is all about. And I just thought it was a kerchief on the head, that would be good enough. Rashi says, Shnei Roshim Yordim Imenu El Mul Panav. It's a kind of a sudar that has two parts to it in front that go down from the head. And Rashi says that makes it a little bit easier for him to spit inside of it, because he just sort of sandwiches the spit between the two kind of straps, or whatever you want to call them, that are on the top of his head. Ravina Havika Koy Achore de Rav Ashi. And again, the Talmidim would always watch the Rebbeim. He was walking in the footsteps of Rav Ashi. Nizdami lo, and Rav Ashi had rok. So Rav Ashi is the Rebbe, and Ravina is the Talmud. And Rav Ashi, through no fault of his own, has a lot of saliva in his mouth, and paskiye lachore, so he spits towards his back. And that's Hashem, the Shekhinah, is in front of him, so he spits behind him. Amalei, so Ravina asks Rav Ashi, lo sovra lomar, doesn't my master agree, lohad Rav Yehuda, to the statement of Rav Yehuda that we learned earlier, that mavlio b'afrakuso, we don't spit in the middle of tefillah on the ground, but rather he sort of swallows, spits it a little bit into his kerchief. Amalei, ana anina da'atai. This is what you call an istinus, right? In other words, he's a very overly sensitive person, and I can't tolerate, spitting into my beged. It's something that that would disgust me. It would just undermine me, unnerve me. Now, this Gemara is paskind in Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Siman Tzadi Zayin, and Rabbeinu Yonah writes that Eina yachal afilu lishos zman muat. How long would it take him to get the beged up so he spits into his beged? It'd take him a few seconds. He can't even tolerate waiting. He has got so much saliva in his mouth. He's so sensitive. Now, there's a story about Reb Chaim Brisker that on Yom Kippur he used to do a lot of spitting. I never understood exactly why, but he felt that if you swallow your saliva, that's a violation of Tainus and Inui on Yom Kippur. There's also another story that I wanted to tell you. Just one second, what was that? Oh yeah, about Lubavitch. In Lubavitch, when they say at the end of Olenu Alkei Nekave, or right before Alkei Nekave, at the end of Olenu, it says Sheheim Ishtachvim Lahevel Varik, and at that point they spit. It's almost as if like the idol somehow, contaminate his mouth when he mentions them as Rick, so he spits it out. And I once davened actually right behind the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I was amazed to see him do this, but he did it with such class, knew exactly how to spit, where to spit, when to spit. It was for me, it was a shakaroo, because I'm not used to people spitting in the middle of davening, even during Olenu, although the Gemara here is talking about the Amidah. All right. Fine. There's also a discussion here in the Yerushalmi in Brachas Perek Gimel that it might be recommended to spit because Shiyah Koso Noki, which is only a euphemism for the fact that his mouth should be clean, his lips should be dry. I don't mean dry, but I mean relatively dry, that he shouldn't have all the saliva coming out. It's a little bit disgusting, to pray to Hashem with your mouth full of saliva. Now let's go back to what we learned before in the Braisa. Mashmiya kolo b'tfilosa rezemi k'tane amona. The fact that he has to raise his voice means that he's lacking in his faith. Amar Rav Huna, lo shanu, that only applies ela sheyachol lechavin eslibo b'lachash. Some people find that if they raise their voice, they have more kavana, the robust enthusiasm and passion of davening out loud gives them more of a kavana. If he would pray in a very low voice, he won't be able to have the proper kavana in his tefillah. And in such a case, we allow him to raise his voice, not to scream, but to raise his voice. And it would seem that even if it's a matter of expanding his kavana, meaning he can have more kavana by saying his tefillah out loud than by saying it low, in a low voice, then that's enough to permit raising his voice. Now again, what about the people around him? How are they going to be impacted when he raises his voice? Says the Gemara, "Vahani mili biyachid." When do we allow a person, for the sake of his kavana, to raise his voice? That's only if he's davening alone. Aval b'tzibur, he's davening with others. Asi l'mitzvah tzibura, he's going to interfere and interrupt the other people who are davening in the tzibur, and therefore he's not allowed to raise his voice, even though it will. You know, he'll pay the price in terms of his kavana. It will lower the level of his kavana, but if it's a betzibur, he has to be super duper careful. He doesn't want to cause a tirda, a distraction to the tzibur. Which, by the way, is a general halacha in tefillah betzibur that people should be very careful. Some people schmooze during davening, and I heard that rabbis who castigate their congregation for making too much noise, they get into trouble. Okay, and then there are people who actually make noise during davening. I'm not talking about schmoozing. Schmoozing is bad enough; it could interrupt others, interfere with us. But some people will make different noises and cell phones and whatnot, so that a person should really make sure not to disturb others during tefillah b'tzibur. Now, here I had a question that I wanted to ask. What about if two people are davening, or for that matter, nine people are davening? There's no tzibur officially, they don't have a tzenter. Would it be prohibited, even for the sake of kavana, to raise one's voice because it could have an impact on others, even though there's no tzibur? So what I want to read to you is the Rambam.
Right.
The Rambam, Perkei Milchus Tefillah, writes, Hamispalel Tzok Shei Kolo Shei Kolo Nishma Li Oznav V'lo L'Ozne Acherim. The Rambam writes that the volume of your prayers should not exceed, or shall we say, it shouldn't be loud enough that others could hear you. And here the Rambam completely omits mention of the tzibur. So it seems like if other people can hear you, then that's already an interference. Now it could be the Rambam has something else in mind. The Rambam's just giving us the shiurim of what's considered mashmiya kolo. The fact that others can hear him means he's being mashmiya kolo, and it's already a miktanei hamuna.
Right.
Now we learned that you're not allowed to be mashmiya kolo in such a way that others will be disturbed. What about li aznav? Let's say no one's around. It would seem that if he's a yachid, then he could be mashmiya li aznav. So some want to say that although as a yachid he's allowed to be mashmiel yozno, but nevertheless he's not allowed to be magbia kolo, because that makes it look like the idol worshippers. The Bir Halacha of the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Kuf Aleph writes that according to the strict letter of the law, if he cannot concentrate or have the proper intention of what's called kavanas halev when he whispers his tefillah, then he should go and daven at home and let him lock himself up in a room and scream as loud as he wants. Which is very interesting, because in effect he's leaving the tzibur because he wants to expand his kavana. Now, he's on the one hand protecting the tzibur, because if he would be mashmiya kolo, that would distract them. But on the other hand, he is now forfeiting the kiyum of tefillah b'tzibur by locking himself up in solitary confinement and screaming. The psychiatrists say that if a person locks himself up in a room just to scream, it's a very healthy thing. He gets out his anger. The Prima Gadim writes that in our time, we should not be matir tefillah for yachid l'tzorach kavana b'tefillah. Can we allow a person to leave the tzibur, daven at home, simply because davening at home expands his kavana? The answer is no. May others will learn to imitate him. He's davening at home. They don't know he's davening at home because of the specific reason that he's an istinus, or that he cannot concentrate in his tefillah because he's busy. You know, he's busy taking care of his needs or whatever it is. So in any event, just to summarize, the Prima Gadim wants to say that today, in our time, we should not make any exceptions. Everyone should be davening with the tzibur. Don't make justifications and say, well, my kavana is enhanced by davening at home. We're up to Rabbi Abba, And this is another story. So Rabbi Abba tried to avoid his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda. He tried to figure out a way that Rabbi Yehuda would not find him. What was he afraid of? Because Rabbi Abba's plans were to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, I don't know if he's going with Nefesh, but Nefesh, why do you have to keep it a secret from his Rebbe? And the answer is because he was afraid his Rebbe would absolutely forbid him from making Aliyah. And the reason for that is because Rabbi Yehuda felt that he needed Rabbi Abba with him in Bavel, and this was not a good idea. So now, if Rabbi Abba would talk to his Rebbe, and Rabbi Yehuda would tell him, no, I don't allow you to go on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, he would be in a bind, because he'd have to listen to his Rebbe, and that would foil his plans. It's interesting because in my own life, I had almost the identical situation. I felt that my Rebbe would discourage me from making Aliyah. So my wife and I made the decision on our own.
Right.
And then we went in to get a bracha. That was a whole different story. Then Rabbi Soloveitchik was very positive. He was full of smiles. And when he asked me where I was going to work, I told him Malei Adumim. He said, bring me a Gemara Rosh Hashanah. I'll never forget this. And he showed me where the name Malei Adumim comes from. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah speaks about how they would declare Rosh Chodesh, which reminds me that in an hour here it's going to be Rosh Chodesh, that they would go up to a high place called Malei Adumim, and that's where they would notify the people about the Chodesh. In any event, why was Rabbi Yehuda so opposed to Aliyah? So the Gemara says, "The Yomar Rabbi Yehuda, Kol Ha'olam Mibavel Eretz Yisrael Over B'Yesei. If someone makes Aliyah from Bavel during that period of time, at least when the Torah Center was in Bavel, he is Over B'Yesei. He's violating a mitzvah saseh." So we're talking about the period of time after Churban Bayis Sheni. And that was the golden age of the Babylonian Talmud. And the pasuk that we're about to learn, and we're going to derive from this pasuk that you're not allowed to go on Aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, this pasuk historically has to be placed in that period of time after the Churban Bayis Sheni, when the Jews settled and all the Torah scholars, not all, but most of them in Bavel. By the way, this story that we're about to learn appears elsewhere in Ksuvas Kuf Yud, but there it's a Maisa with Rabbi Zera. So there are probably two different versions of exactly when and where this happened. Shenemar, Pasuk in Yirmiyahu Anovi, which again, it's a little problematic because Yirmiyahu is Bais Rishon, and we're talking about after Churban Bayis Sheni, but okay. It says in the Pasuk, Bavela Yuvau, Bavel Yuvau, they will be brought to Bavel. Vishama Yu Ad Yom Pakti Osam, Nim Hashem. And that's where they will remain until God says, until I come and I redeem you, and I'll terminate the exile, and you'll come in Aliyat Eretz Yisrael. But that's only what we call Biyom Pakti Osam. Now, in this nevuah, which says Bavela Yuvau, it's a tzivui, it's a command to remain in Bavel, and the pasuk says Ad Yom Pakti Osam. You know, this reminds us of more of the Satmar Sheet against Zionism. You know, like let God decide, you know, when it's ready to reestablish the next commonwealth in the state of Israel. You have no right to take that on your own. And in a similar vein, we have here a statement of, whether it's Rabbi Yehuda or maybe it's Rabbi Zera, to derive from a pasuk that we have to remain in Bavel until the Yom HaPkuda, until the day that Mashiach will come. And therefore you're not allowed to leave Bavel to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Why should that be also? Again, the pasuk seems to indicate that it's also. Shama yiu ad yom pakti osam. But why? What's this all about? I have here a note. Let me just read it. Oh, okay. This note is more about the various girsos. Ozal ashkeche letana de katoni kame de Rabbi Yehuda. I'm sorry, I skipped a line. Omar, meaning Rabbi Abba, declared, Ezel, I will go ve'eshma, and I will hear mine from him, bilsa mi beis vada, words of Torah and halacha from the beis havad, which is a place where, on a regular basis, the Jewish nation would try to gather, or at least the scholars would try to gather, and they would hear divrei halacha from the Gadol HaDor, from the greatest person in that generation. And it says the following: Azel Ashkeche Litano de Ketoni Kamei de Rabbi Yehuda. He went and he found a Tana who was teaching a Braisa in the presence of Rabbi Yehuda. Hoya omed batfilo v'nisatesh. He was standing in tefila and he passed gez. Mamtin achiyichla aruach. He should wait until the wind could carry away the foul odor of his hafacha, as we call it. V'chosim ispal. Then, after he waits a long enough time for the reach to, to push away the smell, then he can go back to his davening exactly where he left off. That's according to the Lishna Kama. Then we have an Ika Diyamri, a second Lishna. Hayaomi Bitfila Uvikesh Lisatesh is Marchik Liachorov Arba Amos Umisatesh. So again, we're not talking about a case where he was already misatish and now the smell is impacting on him, so he has to wait until the ruach comes. But rather, we're talking about a person who's already davening, and he felt the urge to pass gez. Ubikesh lisatish. Excuse me. So what does he do now? He's omei b'tfila. So this to me is a big chiddush. It says marchik lachorov arba amos umisatesh. He has already set up a makom tfila. Now, lachora, you would say that he's not allowed to leave that makom tefillah. We don't walk around in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. And furthermore, if he does leave, and he finishes Shmoneh Esrei elsewhere, that's fine. But he should know that the original location where he set up as a makom tefillah, is completely null and void. It's no longer that his subjective, individual makom tefillah. So now he's in the middle of tefillah, and he has to pass gas. So what he should do is he should literally move out of the spot in the middle of his tefillah, but he should go backwards, marchik me'achorav. And again, whenever we see tzoah, meraglayim, or any of those works, we always need a richuk of arba amos. So now he has to go back from his place, Arba Amos. And then, just one second. Wait a second. I'm just trying to figure out where. It says, Bikesh Lisatesh. So he has the urge to pass air. And what should he do? He should go me'achorov. Ah, now I got it. He goes me'achorov, because again, if he would go milafonov, he's moving towards the Shekhinah, so he wants to move away from the Shekhinah. And then, how far back should he go? Arba amos, umisatesh. Why? Because he still wants to maintain his original location as a makom tefillah. So therefore, he can't be machik himself too much. He can be machik himself four amos, and then mamtin ad sheyichla ruach. He waits a little bit until the smell dissipates, and then chosim ispal. He goes back to his original place. In other words, he was never mafkia the Torah's makom tefillah from his original location. Now, the Braisa adds a kind of a, I'm not sure whether to call it a tefillah, a hodah, or maybe what we would call hitnatzlut in modern Hebrew. Hitnatzlut means when I indicate that I shouldn't have done what I did, but I did it because of the following reasons. Ani mitnatzel. Ribono shalolim, he turns to the God. He says, Yatzartem, Yatzartanu nekavim nekavim chalulim chalulim. So we have all these orifices that you created for us. Yizgoli v'yadu lefanecha charpasenu uchli masenu b'chayenu b'achriyosenu rima v'salas. So let's just count that up. 1, 2, 3, 4. What do we have over here? Goli v'yadu 6, am I right?
Why does the order matter?
I don't know. That's a great question. And all this is because he was mefiach umaskil mimakum shepasak, and he continues to daven where he left off. He doesn't. This is not a hefsek. And Rabbi Abba was so thrilled with this. This new halacha, he says, Ilobasi el shma dover zedai. It was worth coming just to hear this halacha. But the question is, these seven different lashonos. Let me take a look and see if he says anything here. Okay, so first of all, one chiddush is that walking back four amos is not a hefsek. A second chiddush is that reciting this tefillah to the Ribbono Shel Olam is also not a hefsek. And in both cases, he just goes flip, you know, he flips back right back into the place where he stopped davening. But then he quotes a tour, and the preacher's medayik from the tour, Shalom niskan din ze ela b'mafsiam le'achorav. The tour is trying to figure out under what circumstances, what conditions have to be met to allow this leniency to add this Ribbono Shel Olam prayer in the middle of his davening. That's question number one. And to this, the tour answers that it's before he's actually going to pass gas. In other words, he has enough time to take steps back and be marchik dalet amos before he passes gas. And then he says to Ribbono Shel Olam, I understand you created us, but you also created us in the covenant of chalulim chalulim. And this is the human condition. So please take this into account. And by making that prayer, he allows himself to move four amos back, past gas, and then wait till there's no more smell, and then go forward and replace and put himself back into his original makom tefillah, the location where he davened. But if he's already past gas, then there's no need for this Ribbono Shel Olam. This amira was only established and permitted in a case of goli v'yadu l'kol, everybody knows that Why is he taking psios achorov in the middle of his davening? It must be because of yotzim menuruach. Just one second, of yotzim menuruach. But again, according to the tour, this leniency was before it was yotzim menuruach. But since he has to be yotzim menuruach, therefore. Therefore, he can make this takon. So the fact that he takes these steps backwards to be makik himself, that already is indicative of the fact that he has to pass gas. And he writes, Yishigolu v'yadula kol al yidei psiyoso le'achorov shiyotzim en a ruach. I don't understand. One second. We just finished saying that the Torah holds that this din of the irotzon is in a case of mafsiyah le'achorov. V'yesh lo shehus lifsoa kodem shiyetzim en a ruach. So it's before he's going to pass gas, he's going to make this declaration to the Ribbono Shel Olam that, look, you know, it's circumstance beyond my control. This is not what I want. And then he passes gas in that sequence. Amalei, let's just finish this piece of Gemara. Rabbi Abba said, Ilo Basi El Lishma Dover Zedai. It was worth coming to the base medrash just to hear that. Tana Rabbanan, Hayoshein Bitaliso. He was sleeping in his talis, and he's not wearing anything. He's just had a talis over his body. Rosho Sina. So his head is below the talis because it's too cold outside. If he could have popped his head out, that would be the simplest solution to the problem, because then the talis covers the rest of his body. He could recite Kriyat Shema. But in this case, he can't pop his head out. Is Chotzeitz B'talisa Al Tzavaro. He should make sure that part of the talis, that's, you know, again, the talis is covering his whole body, including his head, but he should sort of squeeze part of the talis ad savaro around his neck, and that's going to separate his head from the rest of his body, which is naked, v'kari kriyat shema. But yesh omrim alibo. Some say that he has to tie the talis around below his heart, and that's called Shalote Libo Rosa Erva. Vitana Kama, right, later on we're going to have a whole Gemara about Akev. What happens to the heels of his feet? We'll see the Erva. But right now, the Tana Kama says Mahadik Bitsavaro, it means that below the Tzavar, the talus doesn't have to be tied around his body tightly. So Gemara asks, but Are libo roesa erva? Right, his lave is nothing mafsik between his lave and his erva, and that's a violation of libo roesa erva. And your answer is kasava. This Tanakama holds libo roesa erva shari mutter. There's no iser of libo roesa erva. Now the next Gemara, which we don't have time for today, addresses the question of someone who is walking and he is reciting Kriyat Shema, and as he's walking, and then he chances upon excrement, tsoa, or meraglayim, is urine. And the question is there any way that we can allow him, under certain conditions, to recite Kriyat Shema? So, B'li Neder, that's what we have to do another time.